has got it better than us.
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught. Touchdown, Keenan Allen. What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Number six.
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Yard touchdown. 90-yard touchdown.
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton.
Pod touchdown, Chargers.
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
It is another Wednesday and another victory pod for the boys here on Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. How are we all doing today? Look, Chargers take care of business with a Week 10 victory over the Titans, 27-10. Is Mr. Roman digging into his big bag of chips and tricks? Justin Herbert's using his legs and breaking defenders. Another Minter masterclass as defense generates 7 sacks on the Mayo man, Will Levis. All to be wrapped up in the show ahead, along with some insight into Sunday night football this coming weekend against the Bengals. And to do so, I am Andy Proffitt, your host, and I'm joined by Jack Reed. And hello, welcome to the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. How are you going, mate?
I'm very, very well. Just work's slowing down a little bit as we near the year, and it's a wonderful time of year coming into Christmas. So I hope everyone is looking forward to spending time with their families on Thanksgiving, not that we celebrate it in Australia, but all for our US listeners. And, you know, this is the first Christmas with my daughter. She kind of understands, well, she doesn't understand what Christmas is, but, you know, she'll be into opening presents and things. So we'll get a tree for the first time and spend the first Christmas in our new home. So, yeah, everything's pretty amazing, mate. How about you?
Awesome. My partner and I just had the discussion about getting a tree and whether we face the liability of putting presents under it, because little Mr. Austin is pulling and tearing apart anything he can get his grubby little hands on. So it might be a find somewhere to store all of Santa's tricks and dish them out the night before. But otherwise, look, everything's good. Weather's heating up. Chargers are heating up. What are the vibes like after another pretty comprehensive victory for the Bolts, man?
Well, again, it's now you could argue. So, well, it is. I can't argue. It's fact that 3 weeks in a row, it's been fairly enjoyable viewing. The mistakes have been few and far between. We're keeping teams to playing our game, it seems like. We're dictating terms. Justin Herbert is looking like a psychopath at the quarterback position and, you know, nodding up and down, running, using his legs, doing some vintage Philip Rivers stuff, which is wonderful to see. He's really growing into a leader. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But let's do something different. And this is not me taking over your reins, mate, but you suggested it before we went. Let's talk about the defense, because we always start with the offense. So let's talk about the defense, hey? What did you say?
Absolutely. Just quickly, just because that's my job, brother. I just wanted to point out, clearly no Alistair just yet, guys. He's soaking up the early days of we've forgotten about him. Soaking up the early days of fatherhood, but importantly, he's staying away from us to focus on his wife and daughter. He did manage to get a couple of hours away on Monday evening to watch the game with me, and made a point to say how grateful and overwhelmed he is for the hundreds of messages of support from y'all out there on Twitter, Bolts from the Blue, Storm Cloud. So thank you on Al's behalf. Once again, we are humbled as a group, as he has been this week, by the little community we're a part of and hoping to grow. So yeah, let's start on defense. How about that? Because that's Alistair. That's now 9 games allowing a 20 points or less. Fourth team in the last 40 years to do so across that stretch to start a season. And what I saw as important was, although Brian Callahan had prepared a sneaky good start for Levis in that offense, Minter adjusted beautifully and he really swayed the tide to get the game back into Chargers' favor. Callahan, he, you know, showed a lot of shifts, pre-snap motion, got Levis into empty sets, spread the defense out wider. What that did was force Minter to kind of show his hand a bit and indicate whether it was Derwin or a linebacker that would move into that outside coverage. What you get is one fewer defender in the box, more space for a quick game, creating opportunities for design QB runs, option routes that gave the offense the numbers advantage. And that and the damage in the middle of the field, especially that sort of safety error that resulted in the first Ridley touchdown, had Chargers fans, well, me and Al definitely going, oh, okay. But, you know, there you go. That was a lovely adjustment, I'd just like to start by saying.
Yeah, and I mean, Callahan is doing all the things, and not that I've watched a lot of Titans this year, but I mean, that's the perfect game plan for someone like Levis, a second year quarterback, try to do as much pre-snap motion as possible for him to identify where your first and second reads are going to go, and perhaps even a third read. Or if, as you said, it takes a linebacker out of the box, which means Pollard can you know, do his job. It's just unfortunate that, you know, Levis doesn't seem to be repaying Callahan back with sort of good decision making. You mentioned seven sacks, Andy, you know, but Mint is back up over that 30% pressure rate as well. Levis was pressured about 32%, I think I've got on my notes here. So that effectively limits that big playability. And I know Callahan was trying to perhaps open up the short game, but Will Levis is known to have a cannon of an arm. We saw that with that touchdown to Ridley and the second one as well. But his ability to read the field and Minter adjusted after that issue. I think it might have been Molden that seemed to be really, really shallow, sort of sitting just in the top of the linebackers that freed up that back part of the field. But you know, I wasn't too concerned when I saw that. I said, that doesn't happen often on this defense.
Yeah.
The giant gap, and you're like, oh no, I'm going to trust Minty here. He'll sort it out. And lo and behold, he did.
We'll keep mentioning seven sacks because it's now 11 or 12 in the last 2 weeks, and it's a pretty awesome thing to be watching. Mac played four snaps. Joey Bosa 21. Let's talk about depth, baby. Let's talk about Thule and Dupree. What do you think of the pass rush effort this week, man? Because, like, you said the amount of pressures and things like that. How many of those sacks do you think were actually on Levis? Because cannon for an arm, cannon ball for a brain is what I'm thinking.
Well done. Good. Yeah. Listen, a lot of those were on him. He doesn't do his offensive line any favors, you know, and the fact that we had two premier pass rushers didn't really seem to have a massive impact on the game. I know Joey Bosa played sort of maybe more snaps than we're used to since he's come back from his injury. But I just wanted to highlight our interior pass rush. Puna Ford actually had a great game. He had a sack and a hurry from a big boy like that. And he's going on a true pass set. He was near on 40% win rate. I can't remember the last time I was watching the interior of a Chargers defensive line with that amount of push. So, some of them are on Levis, especially that one where he's, you know, looking and looking and looking. He gets cannoned into in the back of him. I think it was one of the later ones. But, yeah, Minter is being able to generate pressure. Listen, you've got to beat the players in front of you. The Tennessee offensive line's not great. But, hey, I think he's keeping some pressure packages in his back pocket for if and when we make the playoffs, which is exciting.
Oh, look, we'll get into it, but I kind of hope that they start getting unleashed in the next few weeks because we might need it sooner than we think. Man, I think I called Henley's meteoric rise prematurely. Another 14 combined tackles, a sack, the guys hurdling linemen to get to the quarterback. Persistence, just incredible. He's really playing Pro Bowl caliber football. Is there any other defensive players that you think really stood out outside of that front line?
It's a sliding doors moment, right? Because on the other side of the field, we've got Big Kenny sitting there, looks okay in the pass rush, but when it came to I'm not talking about the offense, but when it came to being exploited in the pass game, man, he looked pretty slow. So that's what he was keeping essentially Dyan Henley off the field. I know an injury was keeping Henley off the field as well, but you're right, he's come in and listen, he's going to make mistakes, and because the way that he plays is so fast. You mentioned Thule. I thought he was wonderful again. He might be our second, or depending on our cap situation and what Mac and Joey Bosa want to do, he might be our premier or our number one pass rusher next year. So the more time he can get in the game, the better. Other than that, I thought Derwin had a pretty good game too. He was up around the line of scrimmage a lot. Probably one of his better games.
Strong in run defense for sure.
Very strong. In terms of cornerbacks, I didn't think they were that bad other than letting what's his name off the leash a couple of times. Yep. Yeah. Anything else from you?
No, look, it was a pretty sort of stock standard affair. I think they just kind of all stuck together, did their jobs. And yeah, like we've said, a lot of it really for mine watching it came down to Levis making mistakes, hanging on to the ball too long, just not really knowing when to take a sack or throw the ball away instead of taking an unnecessary sack. And it was just relentless pressure. And as we'll get into the offense, the team across the board was really able to just enforce their will on the Titans. And that, I think, was the most sort of impressive thing outside of the numbers and the stats of both sides of the ball.
Well, it's just there are a lot of comparisons in the media now. We're being called the Los Angeles Wolverines with how we play.
It was bound to happen, wasn't it?
it was bound to happen, right? Like, it's the discipline and consistency that Minter's defense is showing. I think the Chargers have only allowed, I think about 11 deep ball completions this year. So it's bizarre, right? Because we're used to having these bend but don't break defenses, and so Staley's was meant to be that. Who was the defense coordinator before that with Lynn? What was his name? Gus Bradley, sort of with that Seattle defensive scheme, was kind of that bend but don't break. But it's very rare that, well, we haven't seen it, I guess, is that we've got this bend but don't break defense, but we're getting turnovers and we're scoring off those turnovers as well. Which is really cool to see. So I think we're ranked 8th for fewest deep balls yards allowed as well. And again, it's great.
Yeah,
just helps. Please stay Jesse Minter. Please don't go and take a head coaching job.
Be good. Don't be that good. All right, over to the offense, because we've said, look, the numbers. It was a bigger game than the numbers would suggest, and they weren't a true indicator of the special performance that Justin Herbert showcased this week. Looked cool in the pocket, aided by zero sacks. So credit to the linemen where it's due. Over 3 seconds to throw on each attempt. 123.1 passer rating for his 14 of 18. Only 164 yards and a touchdown. But for me, it was unleashing his athleticism and his legs. He took the game on in a lot of moments, breaking ankles with his running, with his pump fakes. Poor Roger McCreary. I think he's still wearing ice skates. But the 32 yards from 9 carries and a touchdown on 4th and 1 was spectacular.
Without wanting to put the mockers on him, Herbert's closing in. If he continues playing this way, he had no turnovers, obviously, but he had, again, zero turnover worthy plays. He's looking after the ball, but he's still unleashing the deep ball. This is the Justin Herbert that we've always wanted, right? We knew when he came into the league, he was an athletic freak. We knew that he had a cannon of an arm, but he almost went in the last season and a half, he went almost too conservative, or the play call wasn't right, so they weren't deep shots. But man, he's now, this season has eerily similarities to Aaron Rodgers' historically careful season, where I think he just had 4. So we're looking at something historic, and now that I've said this, it's going to be Justin Herbert 2 INTs against the Bengals. But anyway, he's leading the league over the last 4 weeks with a 94, 95 grade, 5 touchdowns, 13 big time throws as well. And an incredible passing efficiency, because even though he's 11th in total passing attempts over 4 weeks, he leads the league in big time throws. Yeah. Now that is the quarterback that you want, right? And he's ranked 2nd in the league behind Lamar Jackson for throws of 10 plus yards. On throws of over 10 plus yards, he grades per PFF 95.2, which is like elite of the elite of the elite. So Justin Herbert is having an absolute rip snorter. For American listeners, that means he's playing extremely well.
and his support cast is gelling nicely. Palmer's becoming a somewhat reliable deep-ish threat. McConkey just contributes, finds a way. No targets in the first half. Worked himself into the game for a big 37-yard gain when we started with the ball on the 5th. I was really surprised. I didn't think that having Edwards back would provide such a notable shift in the run game, but I was really wrong. They complemented each other, him and Dobbins, really nicely. Edwards providing that aggression at the line of scrimmage, forcing himself between the tackles. It was nice to see like 8-9 yards on first down runs. while Dobbins was used in more wide zone runs outside the inline tight end, as you've said offline. Like, it was a really good way, and you know, it adds up. 18 pass attempts, and we had 40 odd rush attempts. Like, it was genuine smash mouth football, and we really ground them down.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the inline tight end, and this is an unsung hero that has run or has found himself playing football for the Chargers. That's Tucker Fisk. I think our friend Ryan, a friend of the podcast, noted, he's like, who is this guy? Who's number 42? Because whenever he's on and the runs to his side, it seems like it's working. So, weirdly enough, this guy comes in and he grades as the best offensive graded player behind Zion Johnson, who had a good game in run blocking. So, and for those number crunches out there of the Chargers, 148 total running yards, 47 of those came from running outside the inline tight end and tackles. So we were productive. But as you said, Andy, I think we might've said on the podcast that Gus Edwards might be a bit washed. He was obviously carrying something because the power that he had up the middle, it's almost like Edwards up the gut, you know, shades of Allstott. But that two-headed punch now is going to be challenging for defenses to stop if Gus and JK can stay healthy. When JK busts outside, that's dangerous. When Gus just will grind the opposition down 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards, 4 yards, and you're just getting first down after first down. The clock's just sinking. You're up by two scores. That's Harbaugh football, baby. Oh, so good.
Yeah. We've been pretty hot on the back and forth with play action over the last few weeks. It was a pretty split role, I guess, as far as what Roman decided to dish up. I think it was 58% of dropbacks, no play action, 41 with play action. And in play action, Herbert was great. 6 of 7, 113 yards, looked the business.
Mm. I have a question for you, Andy, actually, but I'll prelude it with some data or some stuff that I was looking at.
Give me the numbers.
This week. I can't put my glasses on because I've already got them on.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I don't have glasses. So,
obviously, offensive line watch, it was a good showing, I thought, actually. It was one of the better of the year against a pretty nasty interior as well. 0 sacks, and they kept the pressure on Herbert to just below 20% of snaps, about 18%. There were still some issues with the stunts, and I still think there's a lack of power inside. But to go back to Joe Alt, who I said had a pretty bad game last week, I can't remember, a listener, whoever you were, disagreed with me a little bit and said he didn't think Joe Alt looked that bad, bar that one where he got lifted off the ground. Joe Alt this week allowed one hurry in his 25 reps. He's, you know, borderline 80 PFF pass blocking grade, very, very steady. And he just took last week in his stride. That can do some weird things to rookies, to knowing that you got absolutely perhaps dominated for the first time in your professional career, comes out and does fantastically well. And you know what? His overall grade PFF, he is fifth in the league amongst starting right tackles, rookie or not. As I said, this is a long-winded question. Andy, Solya came in as a backup and did his job, right? Actually looked okay, I thought. Do you bring Pipkins back in, or because of Solya's age and because of Solya's contract, Pipkins, you know, do you just let Pipkins drift off into the sunset? What say you?
Well, I will rebuff that a little bit by putting the question to you. Why did Sorrell come into the game? Did Solya get injured? Was it play? Was there something like that? Because
you got
that would heavily that would heavily load the response. I thought he was definitely serviceable, and it is a nastier interior than it is an edge from Tennessee. So, you know, there's some big bodies in there to protect. And Solya didn't give away a pressure at all.
No, he didn't. Which I found weird because there was no... Listen, the injury report hasn't come out at all and we didn't hear anything from the game. I didn't hear anything. So whether they were just trying something out with Sorrell coming in, or they wanted to see maybe there was an Earnett spot available, I don't know. It was kind of, you know, Pipkins is out, guys. All right, we've said that you guys are both available. Do you go, you know, you give Sol your 20-ish, 25 snaps, you give Sorella go. So I'm not sure, but what do you reckon? Like, I guess generally offensive line play, are you happy with what's going on?
I think it's getting better. And I think it was one of those position groups that wasn't going to be solved by drafting a premier tackle to go with Rashawn Slater. There's still, you know, I guess as fans, we were sort of hoping to see, you know, continued growth from Zion Johnson. We've had it in dribs and drabs, but for the most part, it's been somewhat of a regression. Bozeman, kind of like a plug and play center, you know, a little band-aid. And then the fluctuating job that sort of Pipkins is doing. Would I put Pipkins back in? What's the outcome to try and see if, you know, if he attracts attention when his contract expires? I think you're just taking tread off the tires, really, by playing him more. He's not suited really to a guard spot, doesn't have a job as a tackle, so we'll see. I think for the experience, and he's played for the most part, like he kind of looks like he knows what he's doing. I think he's a rung above in terms of reliability over Jamari Solia or Foster Sorrell. So yeah, I think when he's good to go, he'll come back into the starting five.
Good response. I'm going to throw another question back at you. The Will Disley drop on the Herbert throw, which was possibly one of the best throws I've seen Herbert make in this 4-week stretch, right? Clearly shows that we are still missing. And listen, Will Disley has been wonderful this year. Let's not downplay that. Yeah, that huge game a couple of weeks ago, and continues to get open. You're here. You're on day one of the draft, and this is far into the future. But what position are you hitting first? Are you going to go interior offensive line? This is on offense. Are you going to go tight end, or do you go wide receiver, or those are probably the three things on offense you're probably looking at anyway. What are you going to do?
I am going to run away. Run away for half an hour to quickly have a look at where the value would be in the sort of early to mid 20s.
Gutshot. Just pick one.
Colson Loveland, the Michigan tight end.
Yes, it is.
Look, that's the sort of first name that comes to mind. There's probably a wide receiver or two.
But what position group? Like, not a player, not a name, just a position group. No. Gosh, no. I wouldn't do that to you.
Look, for me, my drafting philosophy is not necessarily just going after a position group at the spot. It's who's available based on their skill set, or it would be who's available based on their skill set. Do we need a tight end? Yeah, because whilst Disley's been serviceable, for sure, maybe above that, Hayden Hurst has been a flop. Tight end is a glaring, glaring issue for the team. Do you take them in the first round? It has to be like a prodigious talent, you know, to be going tight end in round one. But we do need receivers. We might need cornerbacks as well.
If we're picking late in the first round, though, which hopefully that we are, we're picking in that sort of 25 to 32 range. Do you go tight end round? Tight end round. I'm sorry.
We don't need anyone, man. We've won the Super Bowl. Who cares? Spend it at the ground.
But it does really show that. Could you imagine Herbert in this offense with a Mark Andrews type, with with a Brock Bowers or with a Dalton Kincaid, that more wide tight end, the catching? I think there'd just be yards to boot. On that, you mentioned that you draft a wide receiver. I'm finding this really the evolution of Quentin Johnston, because he's now putting together a bit of tape that he's getting touchdowns and he's getting open. And he seems to always capitalize on defensive misreads, because the touchdown, even though it was a bit of a broken play, he kind of got himself into position
against Cleveland.
And he just was able to wiggle free. He saw his opposition's eyes turn around slightly, and he just went out to his right. But he seems to be finding himself in these holes that are opening up. So I don't know whether it's a combination of the fact that he's getting better and he's sort of the game slowing down for him, or it's really good play design from Greg Roman, or the fact is that he's so big and so fast and he's really starting to use those physical abilities that he's been given, that's kind of putting a little bit of pressure on the opposition DB to be like, oh, geez, how much room do I give him? What's going on here? But again, that's another little evolution because McConkey didn't have a particularly big day. But, you know, this trust that we thought might have been shattered when he drops the ball at Green Bay last year now seems to be coming back, which is wonderful to see.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. It was a great route, that sort of deep kind of slow crosser almost. He just sort of trekked his way through the levels of the defense and then kind of found himself open in the back corner. He's definitely improved on the whole, catching, route running, all those things. The trust has improved. Maybe there's a respect thing from defenses going, maybe it's like he's not the go-to guy. You know, you'd think that they'd go after Ladd McConkey, but come on, how many Chargers receivers are those like number one go-to, protect at all costs? Like, you know, if you're playing that kind of game, then Herbert will find a way to gash you. So I think there's a combination of things. I'll say less a respect thing from opposing defenses because I want to credit QJ more for his improvement and the value that he's actually starting to provide for this team as a former first round pick.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But, you know, it's the thing for me is that he's putting it together week on week and week and is building. And I think you're spot on when you say that QJ doesn't strike as an alpha dog number one receiver. Neither does Ladd McConkey, neither does Will Disley, neither does Josh Palmer. They're kind of just a bunch of guys, but that might be just what Justin Herbert needs and clearly kind of likes, actually, reliable guys that are going to get open. You know what? You know that McConkey's not coming off the field like someone else that might have been taken pretty high in the first round and saying that I didn't get thrown out today. I didn't get thrown out. I've only got 20 yards. It's like, yeah, man, but you won. Oh, I don't care because I want what's mine, what's mine, what's mine, which you can get in alpha dog receivers. So, yeah, fascinating sort of evolution of that group. It's still not strong. And against better DBs, you know, better teams, that might look a bit different. But, hey, that was one of the best defenses in the NFL.
Titans. Yeah, that's it. We definitely can't discount the you're spot on. Beat me to it. We definitely can't discount how stingy that Titans defense has been across the season. And for a now 2-7 record, it's pretty hard to believe just how poorly firing that offense is. Just before we head to some snakes and ladders and your teachable moment, I have to drop this because while he's not on the show, there was a moment in the game. I won't call Al an anti-conservatist, but he was sure to point this out to me just after the game, as we spoke about it during. Another instance where Coach Harbaugh has made a decision that the math, insert glasses, would disagree with. Fourth and goal with a field goal, a resulting field goal to go up 3-0. But he did get aggressive in other ways as the game went on, going for it on 4th-and-1 on the Herbert scramble touchdown. So I just wanted to say, probably to cover himself, if he does seem to be conservative at the start of games, then allow himself to become aggressive if the situation calls for it. At least he himself has a coherent, clear philosophy. But golly, if I could describe the vibe following that Herbert TV scramble, it was up after the score, high fives, all that sort of stuff. Then the team sends Dicker out. We're leading, 12-7 at that point after the score. Yep. Send Dicker out for the point after. Al sat there with his arms crossed, rocking back and forth, repeating, that's okay, just kick the point after rather than go for two and take the lead of 7. Perhaps he can't let his left-wing football brain, perhaps he can't hide it.
But, I mean, points on the board matter against a pretty middling or low quarterback, puts the pressure on him to make sure he's converting and they get down the field even if they don't get a touchdown, they got a score, and you know, it just keeps creeping. I kind of had this vision of, I don't know why, but you know, the, is it in Billy Madison where the kids light the poo bag on fire and leave it on? He goes, he called the shit poop. Yeah. I just imagine, is that Harbaugh
again?
Harbaugh in this game is just like that old guy. You know, he's like, oh, they've lit the poop again. Calls the police can't do anything. And he does this over and over and eventually just sits on the porch with a shotgun. And he goes, that's it. I've had enough. And he just goes, oh, fuck it. We're going to run. He kind of had enough. So,
well, I think what plays into the mindset at that stage of the game to just kick the point after, go up six, is that let's see what Callahan can do after the scripted plays, because I know what Jesse Minter's going to do and I know what the defense is going to do. So it's a complete trust in the entire brand of football. You know, he's not the offensive-minded head, like play-calling head coach. He is the CEO of Greg Roman and Jesse Minter as his, and Ryan Ficken as his, you know, main subordinates. So he's looking at it from a completely, you know, wide stance and going, nope, cool. We don't need to go up seven in the fear that Tennessee's going to drop another seven on us right away. Mm. Let's let the defense do their job. And it's, like, it's good.
You just don't know whether in conversations throughout the week that, that Roman's been, oh, we should have really gone for it. Had a really good play. We should have gone for it. And Herbert's going, yeah, I'd love to go for it. And Jim's just sitting there going, hey, I'll call it when it's ready. I'll call it when it's necessary. And the numbers would suggest that you take plays in isolation and you go, you run the numbers and you go, in that isolated play, it's better to go for it than it is not. However, football is not a game of isolated plays. A whole game, a whole season are these moments that are connected one by one by one by one. And statisticians would, you can't put a number on momentum and you can't put a number on trust. You can't put a number on just the feel of the game. All right. So as much as, you know, Alistair and I have always had these discussions and it's a debate that's old as time. You just feel that Jim Harbaugh's, he can feel it in his plums. He can feel it in his plums, what to do, when to do it. Will it catch us out? It will. And I'm not saying that he's going to make the right call perfectly every single time. But for this point in time, I just like the way that he's crafting the game as a head coach. He's Picasso. He's painting the game as we go. I still don't feel like there hasn't been a frantic, even in the loss against Arizona, it didn't feel frantic. It felt just out of reach. We weren't flailing for life as well. It's just, we just missed it, but we'll grab it next week. We go again. Anyway, I've had enough talking about that because getting a bit ephemeral now.
I can't get you out of my head treading on a bag of flaming dog shit on your front porch and then brandishing a shotgun. So waffle away, my friend. I'm going to race through the Snakes and Ladders quickly. Snakes is a tough one. I didn't see a criminally standout bad effort during the game. So this might be a bit of a cheap shot. We've spoken about it. The first touchdown to Calvin Ridley, reminiscent almost of Cleveland's blown coverages last week. Cam Hart left to cop 41-yard score to the fastest receiver on the Titans team. Elijah Molden crept up, as you said, Jack, almost like into the box. I think it was pre-snap as well. So well done to Will Levis, but just an error, Elijah. You've had a great start to your Chargers career. And against your old team as well. The snake, you slither. No interception for him this week. Sorry, Jackie boy. And for the ladder, this week I'm installing a reinforced ladder, or better yet, scaffold, for probably 8 games. Us and most Chargers fans have been wondering where the fullback Matlock experiment will take us and find its resting place. We'll give it another week, guys, because for him and new boy Tucker Fisk, they look like guys who should be playing bass and drums in a Mastodon cover band. They found themselves in some key running block moments down the stretch and played some great football. So bravo. Over to you, Teach.
Okay. This week's teachable moment is brought to you by the Beast of Gévaudan. Picture this. In the 18th century, the people of Gévaudan in France were terrorized by an elusive, mysterious beast. It was big, powerful, and downright terrifying. Nobody knew if it was a wolf, a supernatural creature, or just a really hangry mountain lion. It became the stuff of legends, feared and revered. But here's the kicker. What finally brought this beast down wasn't just one hero. No, it took a whole crew of villagers, hunters, and some serious teamwork to solve the Beast of Gévaudan problem. Now, back to Harbaugh and Herbert. When Harbaugh keeps calling Herbert a beast, he isn't just hyping him up. He's essentially taking us back to the spirit of the French villagers who conquered their beast. Except instead of being scared of it, Harbaugh's telling everyone, this guy is the beast. I can feel it in my plums. And we're all rallying behind him. It's about creating a legend in the moment, turning Herbert into a larger-than-life figure that everyone wants to see succeed. The weird part of it is, just like the Beast of Gévaudan, because a symbol became a symbol that rallied people together, even if it was out of fear, Herbert being called a beast by Harbaugh does the same thing. It turns Herbaugh, into a central figure.
Gévaudan,
everyone feeds energy into. And instead of taking the beast down, they're pushing it forward, making it unstoppable. So next time you're on a team, think about the legend you're creating. Are you hyping your people up to become beasts? Are you that weird villager rallying behind the myth, making it larger than life? Embrace the wackiness of the hype. Become part of the legend. And remember, every beast needs its squad, whether it's in the 18th century France or in the 21st century football field. Class dismissed. Rawr. Beast time.
Nice, mate. Nice. Okay. Over to week 11. We got the Bengals. Just quickly before we jump into Cincinnati, there's some, for me, a bit of concern. Khalil Mack, 4 snaps. Did he re-aggravate the injury that saw him on the report throughout the week? Was it just a play a bit, see how you feel? If it's not 100%, we'll get you off. He suited up and was not seen again. So we will wait to see what the outcome there is. Beyond that, Gus Edwards limped off the field, was looked at by trainers. He did return for some limited usage, but one to watch as well. And we've spoken about Jamari Solia and what happened there with the 11 or so snaps that he was pulled from the game for. So here we are, week 11. Chargers host the 4-6 Bengals at SoFi Stadium. Flex to Sunday Night Football as two of the league's best quarterbacks do battle. An important conference matchup for both teams, one looking to work their way back into playoff contention, the other looking to beat a team with more than 2 wins and push to cement their spot in the postseason. So what happened last week with the Bengals? Well, finally, Thursday Night Football gave us something worth watching before the weekend arrived. Incredible shootout within the AFC North. Burrow, to anyone with the name Chase in a Bengals jersey, was the order of the day. Jamar, 264 yards, 2 TDs, and running back Chase Brown, 94 total yards and a touchdown to himself. But they got off to a hot start and really let Baltimore back into the game. They were 21-7 up 2 minutes into the third. Ravens scored touchdowns on 4 successive drives, leaving fate in Joey Ice's hands. Down 28-35 on the back of a pretty lucky fourth down call. 3 consecutive defensive penalties on Baltimore. Burrow to Chase got it back within a point with 38 seconds on the clock. And we talk about frantic coaching, Jack. Well, Zach Taylor went vanilla on the 2-point conversion play, failing and costing the needy Bengals a divisional win. So now 2 in 3 games on the year where they've scored 33 points. Pretty crazy. It's a relatively one-sided affair for the output of this team. They have an injury cloud over both Orlando Brown with a lower leg, who's missed the last 2 games, and T. Higgins, still dealing with a quad injury, has now missed 3 games. Bengals 1-4 in games without Higgins this season. Interesting. So start us out with your opening headline, mate.
Well, when I think of Sunday Night Football or being flexed to Sunday Night Football, I think of wah, 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 wah. The good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm thinking of 2 gunslingers walking into an old Western town. On one side, you've got a guy who's just slicing and dicing with efficiency. Not throwing interceptions. There we go. That's what I wanted. The other one, even though he's very, very explosive, he is throwing turnover worthy balls. So You got these two different game styles. Joey Ice, weirdly enough, is being very hot, and Justin Herbert is being very cool, calm, and collected. Nice. So I think it's going to be an interesting battle to see if we can, if the Bolts can suck the time off the clock, get a 2-score lead, and then to have Burrow come out and do his thing, you know, Chase or whoever he's throwing to, because that was an incredible game. So yeah, it's going to be a fascinating quarterback battle, and the whole of America is going to be watching, and the world.
Yeah. I think it's a real test for Jesse Minter. Are the Chargers in for the chase? Defensive unit is really finding form regardless of who's on the field. We've got the potential return of Christian Fulton. Two rookie corners. All are going to have their work cut out with them to slow down Jamar Chase. And a big day as well for run defense. So no days off. Keep firing. What are your keys to victory, my friend?
Well,
apart from stopping very, Chase.
a very weird one to start off with is winning on the special teams. I thought watching that game against the Ravens, the Bengals special teams situational football wasn't great. They missed some key tackles and some fairly significant returns. So that hidden yardage just makes the job easier for your offense and makes the game harder for the opposition. So that hidden yardage, look for Darius Davis, Cameron Dicker to do his thing, points on the board, keep it ticking over. That's going to be a big one to put pressure on them Bengals.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up special teams, and I feel bad that we didn't at least, you know, give a shout out to Darius Davis for that awesome 56-yard return. He's zippy, he's getting there, he's finding his form as well. It's great. Like I said, important day for Jesse Minter. The Bengals are outscoring their opposition by a combined of 28 points in the first quarter this season, so it's really got to be a hot start. I think the Chargers are right up there, plus 32 or something in the first quarter, so it's, we can't allow a shootout early. We've really got to get a head start on the scoreboard.
And my next one is to absolutely hammer their offensive line. Because, as I mentioned, Joe Burrow had three turnover-worthy plays, but the Ravens were able to generate a 48% pressure rating.
They were smashing him.
On Burrow. So he had 40 total pressures. Only two of them converted to sacks, right? Which tells me that Burrow's doing incredibly well to put up 30-odd points by getting pressured. I mean, 48% is untenable, generally. Anything above 35, 40%, you're just going, well, I can't do my job. So credit to where Burrow is due. But yeah, let's just put the heat on him. Clearly, it's a porous Bengals offensive line.
Says a lot about Joe Burrow when he's copping that heat and he's still, I mean, he threw the ball 56 times, but 428 yards is and four TDs is a very impressive outing. On that pressure, it's the guards. We talk about interior offensive line issues plaguing the Chargers. They're plaguing the Bengals. Kappa, 4 sacks, 25 pressures. Cordell Volson, 4 sacks, 27 total pressures. They are the culprits, so keep that interior defensive line fresh and firing.
Yeah, are we going to do one more each?
Go for it.
Yeah, I got one more. I think the Herbert always plays well in these games. I think in big games, he generally shows out pretty well. So I'd like to see him not try and do too much, because there is a world where he just goes on a little bit of a heater. He knows the eyes are on him. It's this new Justin Herbert that likes to look a little bit like a maniac and, like, you know, a little bit like Gruden. There were some Gruden eyes there where he's nodding his head up and down. Just chill, man. Trust in Roman. Trust in a bit of JK. Just trust Gus the Bus. Soften up that defense early, and then pick your time to suck the life out of Joey Ice and the Bengals.
Nice. Just on the Bengals defense, bottom half of the league for yards allowed, generated 6 interceptions, 17 sacks, and have allowed 13 rushing touchdowns on the year. So it really allows the Chargers, it's in the making to allow the Chargers to keep progressing under Greg Roman in any which way that he likes. You know, we've got avenues. It's the defense that have been letting the Bengals down. And I will also touch, the Titans run 10 personnel at the third highest rate in the NFL. The Bengals do it at the fourth highest rate. Is it the Callahan effect? Regardless, we saw how it started to, it looked like it could have damaged the team, the Chargers, last week. Well, we've had a week to experience it and prepare going ahead for the Bengals. So look forward to that. All right, result prediction, mate. I am going Chargers 24, and I think the Bengals will score 21. They will eclipse the 20-point margin that we've only allowed so far this year, but Jamar Chase is going to be a bit of a headache.
Yeah, I've gone very similar to you, 27-24. It's always tough to bounce back after a game against the Ravens. They always make you work very hard. Mm. So we're just going to get the biscuits on this one, but it's going to be a barn burner, I think. It'll be hopefully a really, really fun watch. You know, and Herbert on the national stage or the international stage is just, if he plays well, the hype's there, baby. The hype's there.
Absolutely. All right, let's round out the show with a little around the headline. I wanted to touch on this on last week's show, but we went down the trade talk avenue. But there's a couple of teams in the league that would be watching their former RB1s play for another team and licking their wounds. The Titans and the Giants letting Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley go. They were headlining off-season moves. At Baltimore, Henry's averaging 112 yards a game, has scored in every contest, tallying 12 TDs. He's on track to eclipse his efforts of 2020 with that 2,000 rushing yard season. Saquon Barkley, 99 yards per game, 6 TDs on the year, and a highlight reel that no one will forget with the 360 juke against Jacksonville into the reverse hurdle. Go you good things, RBs.
God, that was amazing, wasn't it? I watched that. God, I've never seen that before in my life. That's something new.
It was video game stuff. NFL Street.
NFL Street. Amen. Good job. Good call from you. Listen, I
stole that off Pat McAfee.
Did you? Okay. Oh, he's a good man. He's a good man, Pat. He's a good man. We've got to get him on one day. I am smiling. And the reason why I'm a little bit smugly, it might be a little bit too early, but I did say on one of our draft shows that I would take Drake May over Caleb Williams as the number one overall draft pick because the Bears have just learned that, you know what, May Day isn't something just to celebrate, but it's also when a rookie, the other rookie, QB, rolls into Soldier Field and makes you, Chicago Bears fans, wish they'd stayed home. Drake May wasn't spectacular, I'll give you that, but he didn't need to be. He walked into Chicago, outplayed Caleb Williams, and casually brought down the Bears' NFL best home win streak. Now, Mr. Caleb Williams, you're sitting at 0-2 against your fellow rookies because you thought you were so much better than them. And I tell you what, the Bears fans, not only did they leave, but the booing was extremely loud. And the punts were frequent when you said, hey, man, you're not going to be punting this much this year. Well, you're a liar. They're completely directionless. And I think what's-his-name, Waldron, is gone. So
the scapegoat.
The scapegoat. I just think maybe
is Eberflus next?
Yeah, definitely. Has to be. But I just think, you know, instead of focusing on which rookie QB they'll face next, maybe they should just look in internally and focus on their rookie QB because he is copping some big hits, and I'm worried that he might not have the career that everyone thought. But early days, I'm not gonna go too hard on that just yet.
Not have your cake and eat it too just yet. But 9 sacks is crazy business. Crazy business. On that text that he sent to Aussie rookie punter Tory Taylor, hey, welcome to the team. You're not going to have to punt that much. Well, I don't know, have they played 9 or 10 games? Caleb Williams has 1,785 pass yards. Tory Taylor has punted the ball 45 times for 2,153 punt yards. So, you know, that's going to be one of those like bad tweets that just ages horrifically. And maybe you were right. All right, my last one, because I started it a little bit last week. I'm really finding the Dallas Cowboys to just be a really easy target with everything that goes either on the field or off the field. And to, you know, to jump back on my first headline, they had a chance to sign Derrick Henry. They decided to give a big bag of cash to Dak Prescott, who's now out with a hamstring, could be season ending if he requires surgery, and CD Lamb. And that, you know, that's fair enough. It was not a pretty outing against the Eagles, as not much has been in season 2024. Made comical, though, by the sun blazing through the giant windows at the west end of Jarrah's World. And when asked if he'd consider putting blinds in, which CD Lamb was like, yeah, please do it. It's ridiculous. Jerry responded with, and I'm paraphrasing here, absolutely not. It gives us an advantage too. Well, it doesn't when your extremely highly paid wide receiver can't see the ball to catch it in the end zone. Pack it in, Jerry. You need to go to bed.
Oh, wow. And Dak Prescott, I think, is out for the year with season-ending hamstring surgery. So it gets worse and worse and worse. Very much like this franchise as well. And I'm not having a go at Jets fans here, but I am going to have a go at the Jets and Aaron Rodgers. Because they thought that Aaron Rodgers was going to be the savior. But I tell you what, a little midget just made them look silly. A little midget just went 22 of 24, a passing TD, two rushing TDs, and was just made it look so effortless. He was like a little tin soldier that's been turned up a little bit, just casually walking across the floor. Meanwhile, Rodgers is just all over the shop. I think the offense is disjointed. The only thing consistent about the Jets was their inability to finish drives. The defense just looks a bit shot. They look a bit lost. Aaron Rodgers kind of reminds me of Tom Hanks in Castaway. And the only difference is that
at least
Wilson had a plan, right? Because I don't know, what plan that Aaron Rodgers and the Jets have. They've got a coach that's probably not going to be there next year. They've got 30 players who are on, who are free agents or nearing the end of their contract at the end of the season. The only thing manifesting here, I think, is the only thing Aaron Rodgers is manifesting is the Jets fans who have always manifested is that the Jets will always, always, always find a way to collapse, whether it's a butt fumble or mushrooms in the subway, poor gangrene. Sorry, guys, but your hopes are shot.
Yeah, the writing's on the wall when the fan base is called gangrene, isn't it? Like, the foot's going to come off. The foot is going to, it's going to fall off or be cut off.
I think that, well, they just forgot to cut it off and it's actually in their bloodstream now. So, ta-ta, see ya.
Yeah.
Very good call by you. Very clever.
Well, that's a heck of a way to end the show for this week. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Hopefully we can get together again next week and celebrate yet another victory pod. But it should be a heck of a contest regardless on Sunday Night Football. So until then, guys, take it easy. Bolt the fuck up. See you next time on TDU.
Ta-ta. Love you all. Bye.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Woo! Good night to all!